You're listening to the British Birth Stories podcast, the place where mothers from around the country share their birth stories. I am your host, Ashley Brennickmeyer, and I'm so glad that you're here. On today's episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with Amma Sangara, who tells us about her two NHS births in Birmingham. Ace was born 18 months ago, and Romy was born 3 months ago. He was born in the height of the pandemic, and he also was a BBA birth, which this is my first time hearing a firsthand account about essentially an accidental free birth with her toddler and husband acting as midwives at home. So I think you're in for a treat. Here's Amma. Thank you so much, Amma, for coming on the show today. It's so lovely to have you. Let's jump right in and chat already about a little bit about yourself and where you live and who you live with, if you could talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Ashley. I'm Amma. I live in Birmingham with my husband, Rick, and my son, Ace, who's 18 months old, and my son, Romy, who's 3 months old, so he's my pandemic baby. If I'm not working, I work for a jewellery company in their marketing department. So it's really fun, actually, because it's kind of like the antithesis to like changing nappies. So it's nice to always return to work after mat leave too.
And then were you trying to fall pregnant with your first, or did it happen as a surprise? If you could just talk us through that a little bit.
With Ace, definitely we were trying. We had like a really great summer. We were going to like lots of weddings, a lot of our friends were getting married. We were just enjoying it as a couple, really. And I remember it was like the World Football Cup. And it's the only time I ever watch football. And just like we were out and having a really nice time. And I just turned to Rick, my husband, and I was like, what do you reckon? Like, I think we've just like had a really nice few years together. Do you think you want a baby? And he was like, yeah, let's go for it. And I'd been taking like my prenatal vitamins and everything, so for me I knew I wanted one. It wasn't that spontaneous, but it was just about the time feeling right, and I never wanted to feel like I was like forcing anything. So for me it was really important that it just came like at a natural time, and I never wanted to regret having a baby as well. Like, I wanted to feel like I'd had some sort of life with my partner beforehand, and I felt fortunate enough to feel young enough to have done that and not necessarily feel pressure. And so we kind of like started trying straight away, and it was definitely like four days after conception or whatever, and I just could feel, I knew I was pregnant. I just knew it. I didn't even care about waiting to take a test, like I knew I'd have to wait because it was too early to tell. And I remember even like a week later, I had such bad heartburn. It was so ferocious, like it was like a raging fire in my chest. Like, I was joked and said I was kind of like one of Daenerys Targaryen's like dragons or something, and it's like I'd breathe a fire and it would just burn a city to the ground. And then we were like big Game of Thrones fans over here. So yeah, it was really funny. And I also just knew, so that was really nice, because obviously we were just about very fortunate to get pregnant straight away. And then doctors confirmed it a few weeks later and everything. And then we were kind of like, okay, so what's kind of going to be our route? Like, how are we going to go about this journey? And I'd been listening to another podcast, actually. It's called The Pregnancy Podcast. It was actually an American podcast. So while some of the like show material wasn't relatable to me, a lot of it was. And it wasn't necessarily like a fun podcast, but it was so informative. Like, each week she would do like just pick a topic. So it could be having your baby, how close you should space your babies, or the risks of that, or like a whole topic dedicated to breastfeeding. And I just found it so useful, and I felt like I learned so much from it. So I used that as one of my kind of guides throughout my journey. And then we decided that we would go down the hypnobirthing route. And I knew I'd heard about it for years. And I was like, definitely, because I'm so squeamish. Like I could never even watch a baby being born on like a vid, like on YouTube or anything. So I knew I needed to kind of like, almost like rewire my brain. And hypnobirthing just sounded like the perfect thing to like do. I'd heard really good things, like my sister-in-law had done it as well. So we weren't on a really like glamorous budget or anything. So I decided, instead of like going on a course, that I'd like buy some books. And I looked into Maria Mongon. So she's like kind of like the OG hypnobirther. Like her book's like really ugly and it's like really old and just feels like it needs like a facelift. But actually, it was really, really good for like teaching me all the like techniques. So like the relaxation techniques, the breathing, the visualization. And then I looked into Holly DeCruz and she wrote, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's called Your Baby, Your Birth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll put both of those books in the show notes as well, so other moms can have that as resources.
Basically, Holly DeCruz, her book was better because it was just like, not better, sorry, it was different because it was just like a modern day outlook, and it was just like prettier to look at as well. And it was, it really kind of got me into like the mindset. So Marie Mongon was definitely about all the practical elements, and then Holly DeCruz was definitely about me kind of, like I said earlier, rewiring the brain. And I just felt like, wow, I'm really like, this is really sinking in. I'm really enjoying it. I'm really changing my outset. And I don't know if it was like an ignorance is bliss kind of situation. So, you know, obviously I'd never done it before, but I was definitely gaining confidence. I was going around to like all my friends and family saying like, we're made to do this. This is what our bodies are supposed to do. Like, we don't need any assistance. We can do it. So, oh, actually I should touch on there the fact that I did really want to go for, because people kind of mistake hypnobirthing for like having a drug-free birth or having what's traditionally called a natural birth, which is, I don't know, it's terminology that I don't really like anyway. I never really used the word natural because I always think it kind of like implies that if you don't have it, that what's traditionally known as natural, then it's unnatural. And I just think that's kind of like isolating language anyway. So I just wanted to go for what I called like a vaginal birth without assistance. And I really got into that mindset, and I looked into home birth as well. But at the time we'd just moved house, and it just, the house just definitely, it was so new. It actually didn't feel like home. So it was our house, but it wasn't homely. And I was just speaking to my husband about it, and I was saying, I know that sounds weird, but isn't like one of the main reasons for being, having a home birth is because it's a familiar and therefore like a comforting environment. And that's not how I felt. So we looked at the next option, which was, well, not the next option, but if you wanted to go down an avenue where you're less likely to have medical kind of intervention, because hypnobirthing does really stress on the fact that you're more likely to have a medical intervention if you're in a medicalized environment. So we looked at a midwife-led unit. So all midwife-led, obviously, and it was called the Serenity Birth Center. It was like really beautiful. I'd heard great things. So I actually called up and asked if I could go and view the birth center, because I just thought, I need to see, obviously, where I'm giving birth. And you'd be surprised how many people don't actually do that. So for me, I just thought, I have to see it because I'm going to have my baby there. So we went and viewed it, and basically it was just really lovely. It's like five beautiful big rooms with like double beds. It's like a hotel, underfloor heating, lovely. Wow. Big pools. It was really, honestly, it was amazing. And everybody there was so nice.
And was this via the NHS as well?
Yes, sorry, it was via the NHS. So we were not in a financial position to even look at anything else. So, but I'd heard my sister-in-law, I think, had looked at this place as well, and she said, and honestly, it was round the corner from my house as well. So it wasn't even that we'd having to, like, you know, pull strings to get to go there. And it was lovely. And actually, I think it's because I'm like a real believer in the law of attraction. So in my head, I was like, if I see every single room and imagine myself having my baby there, then it's going to happen, like that, because I've seen the rooms and it's going to happen. So that's what I really took from that, actually, that visit. And it was I think the hypnobirth really got me into a good like mindset. And it was the only like rubbish thing about not going on a course. Again, that was kind of a financial choice as well. I just thought, I'm going to go on mat leave for God knows how long. And I just thought I wanted to save where I can. I just felt like I couldn't really get my husband involved in reading the books, and everybody like interprets things in different ways. So I was just like, how am I going to get him to understand all of this? So I was a bit of a dork, and I created like a, almost like a cheat sheet. So it's kind of, it had like all of, all the breathing techniques. And so it was like calm breath, birth breathing, there was like another one, I can't remember. J breathing, like down breathing as well, like surge breathing. So I created like a sheet with all of that on there, and just loads of like visualization triggers. So if he saw me kind of like waver throughout the labor, he could kind of be like, okay, these are one of your like prompts to like snap out of it, like think of the honeymoon or think of this. And so I'd had all these little things that to me kind of sparked joy that he'd be able to like kind of help me remember when I was maybe like losing it or whatever. And we had like these like little acronyms on there to help us like make decisions, which I'll talk about later, but it did really help with the labor. That was kind of our journey. I felt like I had a relatively comfortable pregnancy, lots of sickness in the first trimester, but was fortunate enough to kind of outgrow that. So it started off quite positive back in 2018, that's for sure.
Pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID.
And did you choose to find out the gender?
Yes. So with Ace, we always knew we'd find out. I always had this idea that if I was lucky enough to have more than one child, I'd find out with one and not with the other, just to like kind of experience it. And actually, it's really funny because everybody felt that they were able to just tell me that I was having a girl, because I think the first 20 weeks they weren't very kind to me. So I had like really bad skin, like my hair was falling out, I was just feeling really rough, and you could just see it, like I wasn't sleeping well. And then like all my friends and family, they're just like, yeah, you're definitely having a girl. Because I don't know if you know, like there's a myth that if you're having a girl, she steals your beauty or something.
Yes, people have told me that in this pregnancy, and I'm having a boy. And then people also told that to me when I had a girl.
Well, I didn't have a girl. So when I found out, I started believing it myself. I was just like, I must be having a girl because I just look terrible and I feel terrible. Aww. And then we went and found out, and they told us it was a boy. It's not that I had a preference or anything like that. And then we found out we were having a boy, and I was just like to everyone, I'm not having a girl, I'm just ugly. Like, I'm just ugly right now. So that was like kind of funny, but like really ridiculous, because I really started believing it as well. But luckily I was fortunate enough to outgrow sickness. I feel like I listened to your podcast and I think you had it for the whole time, which is just horrible. And I just felt really lucky to have like came into like what was known as the golden trimester. And then we got to like enjoy this whole pregnancy, knowing that we were, you know, going to have a little boy at the end of it, hopefully.
Mm. And how far along were you when you've noticed that labor began?
So before I started labor at 37 weeks, I went in just because I was feeling a lot of reduced movement. So I went in to like have the little scan of like the monitor around me. I forgot what it's called. But basically, I sat in there for a few hours and it was fine. Ended up being fine. It was the second time I'd been there for that reason. And they told me everything was fine. There's enough movement. And then suddenly a midwife just like came into the room, like burst into the room. I was on my own. And she said, okay, we're going to get you induced now. And I was like, what? You're going to get me induced? Like, first of all, like, don't you ask if someone wants to be induced? And second of all, I was just like, I'm fine. Like I was just monitored and I'm fine. I'm sorry if I wasted your time, but I thought I had reduced movement. Like, and she was like, no, we think you should be induced because this is the second time you've been here. I was like, yeah, well, the second time I've been here and second time it's been fine. Like I said, I didn't mean to waste your time. And I started feeling myself getting so panicked because obviously I had this grand idea. Well, it's not a grand idea. It's a very realistic idea of going to a birth center and giving birth. But but society had kind of made me feel like it was a grand idea because everybody was telling me, oh, no, you're going to be begging for the epidural. You're going to be wanting this. And it was kind of like frustrating, like to hear all of that as I was going through my pregnancy. And then anyway, I called my husband and he came over, like rushed over from work. And he asked him why they were telling me that I needed to be induced. And they didn't really give a clear reason. And it kind of felt like I was just being rushed into labor. And actually one of those acronyms that I put on the birth sheet, like the cheat sheet that I made for him, actually really came to use. So it was like, I don't know if you've heard, but it's called like BRAIN, which means mm-hmm. You probably know it. So it's like benefits, risks, alternatives, what happens if I use my intuition, or what happens if I do nothing. So we kind of use that to assess the situation, because there we were like faced with like an institution literally like telling us that we're risking things if we don't, you know, agree to being induced. So it was really quite scary in the moment. And I'm usually quite assertive as well. So to be in that position where actually I didn't know what to do was strange for me anyway. And we decided that actually there are alternatives as we walked through that acronym. And we asked if we could just have a scan to see that the placenta function was okay, and to see that the baby growth was fine as well. And so they did, I hate to say it, but they reluctantly did it and gave us the scan, and everything was fine. And it was a lovely student nurse, I remember at the time, student sonographer actually at the time. And she said, oh, well, it makes sense why you keep coming in for reduced movement, because you've got an anterior placenta. And I said to her, like, what does that mean? And she said, it's like, it's at the front. So it's almost like providing a cushioning. And I said to her, that's so frustrating that nobody told me that, because I had like people around me who were pregnant, who were always talking about how much movement they were feeling. And that was the very reason why I kept going in. Whereas I always felt movement. I just didn't feel as much movement as everybody around me was. So I felt like isolated because of that. And when she told me that, I was thinking, well, actually this would have really made a lot of difference if I knew that this was the case a long time ago. And it's almost like it kind of felt like nobody had checked my notes. And so it was a near miss, but they did tell me everything was fine. And because obviously if I had an induction, I'd read that you're more likely to obviously have more painful contractions, and that could be like almost like a slippery slope, and you end up with epidural, and if that doesn't work, then could be a C-section. And I was really trying to get away from that if I could. And so that was when my labor almost started, but it didn't, sorry. And then when I actually went into labor, it was 41 plus 3 days. And so it definitely felt like a really long time. Again, I remember lots of people messaging me, and they were just like, you had your baby yet? You had your baby yet? You had your baby yet? And it just felt like that really, like the anxiety was really building up in those 11 days or 10 days or so. It's funny actually, because I think it was like the Game of Thrones like finale or something. And I don't know if you watch it, Ashley, but there's like a bit where Arya's like, she's got like a famous line where she says like, not today, when somebody asks her like, what do you do, like when you face the god of death or something. And I remember that was, we watched like, it was the finale, I'm talking like the day before Ace was born or something like that. So there were two really big things going on in my life. And I remember my husband like saying to my husband, oh God, like everybody's stressing me out and I know they mean well, but I'm starting to feel so tense, and this is not how you're supposed to feel when you're about to have a baby. And he was just like, well, why don't you just tell him? And I was like, I feel guilty because I know that they mean well, but obviously if I had a baby, I'd tell him I had a baby. And then And then I remember just like putting up an Instagram post with like Aria on it saying, like, when everybody asked me if you had your baby, not today. And then it kind of like was funny, but it just got the point across. And then I never got any messages after that. So it was actually like worked out really well in like a roundabout way. And then when we did go into labor, I had like, I woke up and I had a show, and then I was like, oh, it's all kicking off. And started getting contractions like within like an hour. Then we just like drove to my mom's, had like a nice time there. I said to her, like, I'm in labor, and we just like had food, played Scrabble, and then came back, and then got to the evening. And so the show was at like 6 a.m. in the morning or something. And then we got back, and I said to my husband, like, you should go to like sleep, because I reckon it's going to come tonight then. And then like contractions were growing stronger, like surges, we call them in hypnobirthing. And then I had a bath, and surges were getting really, really intense. Really intense in the back as well. Like, I never had it at the front. It was really bad in the back. But I realized later that I had, the baby was in like back to back position, which causes like what they call back labor. And then we went in around 1 a.m. and I got there, and the midwife said, oh yeah, like, you're only like 3 centimeters. I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, I feel like I'm about to die, like 3 centimeters. And then they were really kind, actually. And they just all had such a lovely welcoming attitude in that Serenity. And they said I could labor in a room overnight, which obviously there were more than within their rights to send me home. They had a spare room. So we just like dimmed the lights, and I just labored all throughout the night in there. And those were like my darkest times of labor. I remember just throwing up a lot, like to the point where I was like, what have I even got left in me to vomit, because this is intense. And then they came into the room in the morning, and I think it was like only like four, I can't remember. It was something that felt very discouraging, which was one of the reasons why initially I wasn't going to ask, I was going to opt out of vaginal examinations. But when it came to it, I felt like it was just useful to know. And I remember saying to them, I feel like this room is really like, I've just had a really horrible night and I really don't like being in here. Do you have a spare room? Which I know sounds really diva-ish, but I just thought I'd ask. And they said, actually, that, because they only have 5 rooms, and they did have another one like spare. And I really believe, like, again, with the reason why I didn't have my home birth at first at home, because it didn't feel like the right ambience, I really believe in the environment playing such a key role in like your experience. So when they moved me out, I was so grateful, because it was just almost like a fresh start. And you know, I didn't know, but I was going to spend like 18 hours in that new room as well. I wasn't far along enough to like get in the pool, but I just sat on like a rocking chair and just like breathed through. And then we finally got into the pool, put my playlist on, like dimmed the lights, etc. And it just like, it was just going on forever. It was going on forever. And in hindsight, I realize it is because of the position of the baby, it usually results in a longer labor, because the baby has to kind of turn to come out. But Ace didn't turn, but it was just a long labor. And then the midwives were just like absolutely amazing. I remember at one point I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm so shattered. And they went and made me like tea and toast, which I just thought was amazing. And then I got up and I went and had some fresh air, and I had like these loads and loads of snacks with me that I'd packed. Again, that's like a massive hypnobirthing thing. A lot of people say you shouldn't eat when you're about to have into labor or give birth, but they really encourage it for your energy. So I had like loads of nuts and like coconut water, and then that just felt like, I felt like I'd back in the zone again after that kind of reset, another reset. And then finally Ace came, but he was actually born like what they call sunny side up, so he never turned. So I had like, I think, second degree tears, nothing too crazy, because it means that basically the widest part of the face comes out. And I was so grateful to the midwives for not actually stressing that that was the position of the baby, because when I did all this research after, I realized that quite often, as soon as they see the babies in that position, they like start recommending like more pain relief, and then the baby doesn't turn, and then you're likely to have a cesarean section as well, and because their chin can get stuck when they're coming out. And actually they knew what I was going through, and they knew why I was having that back pain, but they didn't tell me until I'd had the baby. And I thought, well, that's because they were really trying their best to make sure that my birth plan kind of, you know, worked out. And I just thought, actually, I was so lucky because I had two midwives, and everybody who came, dipped in and out, were just so encouraging. Like, I definitely wouldn't have been able to do it without them and my husband and the cheat sheet, which they were laughing at, but they thought it was really useful because it meant that he could count me into all the breathing techniques, and like he knew what I'd need to do. So I had like, you'd have to do this technique if I'm going for a surge, or this if I'm in between a surge, and this when I'm about to push the baby out. And it was actually really positive in the end, that experience. But Ace actually passed meconium when he was born, so I was literally ready to go home within like an hour. But we had to stay over because I think the last checks, it was really late in the evening and the doctors had gone home. And then, so we had to wait for the morning to leave.
I also want to just say really quickly as well, how you're literally like my role model, being able to voice your needs and saying, I need a different room. What are my options? I'm definitely going to call on that for this birth. So well done, you.
Thank you.
Always should be applauded when women ask for what they need.
Thank you.
And then I know you said you had a second degree tear, or had a few tears. Did you need stitches, or how did you heal from those?
So Charlie, I feel like I need to say their names, Charlie and Maureen, my midwives who helped me give birth to Ace. They were so good. And I remember I delivered the placenta. That was all like physiologically. And then I was lying back, and Charlie was like, I'm definitely going to do this because I'm like the best seamstress around. And I just loved her confidence as well, because I have heard of people like doing botched jobs, and far worse than botched jobs on just a small tear as well. So actually I just loved her, just from start to finish. I was just like, I've just had two angels like descend into this room, and that has definitely shaped my entire experience. Like, I could not have done this alone. I think because I drank so, she was laughing because she's like, I've never seen somebody drink so much water throughout their labor. She had to like fit a catheter first and sorted that out, and then she did the sewing up or whatever it's called. And I remember when they're about to leave, I'd before I went to the birth center, I'd packed like a box of chocolates for whoever was going to deliver my baby. And then as we're leaving, I was like, oh, let me give you something. I've got something for you. And they like turned around, and I just pulled out this measly box of Ferrero Rochers. And then I was thinking, gosh, this kind of feels ridiculous. Like, you bring babies into the world and I'm giving you a box of chocolates. But they were like really sweet and grateful. But I was thinking, gosh, that's like the crappiest tip you could ever give anybody, really, like once they've done something like that. And I remember making a mental note to do something really special for the next set of midwives who helped bring baby into the world.
It's so thoughtful. I need to do that as well, I think.
It's my mom made me do it.
so thoughtful. What was the postnatal period like, especially in terms of how did you choose to feed Ace?
So definitely breastfeeding. It was like, for me, there was no other option. It was just something I knew I wanted to do, and I was like, as long as I have milk, it's gonna work. And obviously it's just not that easy. And it was, I like came home, I was on a high, and then definitely had some postnatal blues, and it was definitely linked to the fact that I was really struggling to feed him. He was just crying all the time. I knew I had plenty of milk. And it came in quite soon, like day four or something like that, because I know it's a struggle when it's just a colostrum. And then it was just the postnatal period in general. Like he definitely didn't stop crying. And I've grown up with like nieces and nephews who are now like 14 years old. So, and I've seen them, like, I knew it wasn't normal that that's how much he was crying. So I think on his checks, like I'd mentioned it a few times and they were just like, yeah, he's got colic. And I was just like, well, colic, what is colic? Like, I don't really know. And it just sounded like just like a term that was just thrown on, like a way of masking, like loads of things that could be wrong with the baby, just like not having the time to pinpoint exactly why a baby's crying. And so I really struggled with latch. Like I felt like the health visitors didn't, like they just tell me, yep, you're doing it right. Yeah, it looks like you're doing it right. Like, but it hurts. And when you leave, he's going to be crying all day. So something's not going right. But it's like a weird one with the whole situation. Because I, looking back, I don't know if I did get enough support or I just didn't get it. Like it's, I just still don't know to this day. And then eventually I like figured out that he had like acid reflux and a dairy intolerance. So I had to go completely dairy free. Well, I didn't have to, but if I wanted to continue the breastfeeding journey and have a comfortable baby, I'd have to go dairy free. And I did. And I noticed an instant change in him and he was thriving. It was ridiculous. He was no longer like throwing up and things like that. It just meant that I was just miserable without cheese, but luckily he grew out of it. So he grew out of it. So that was fine. But, I don't remember feeling the support. And it's just, I think it is, there's definitely a fourth trimester. And in this country, people definitely don't think there's a fourth trimester. That's how I feel. And it's just, like I read the book, The Fourth Trimester, and there are so many other cultures, even my culture, actually, like being Indian. So, to be fair, like my mom did really help out a lot, but it's like if you're living in India and you have a baby, you immediately go and live, you go and stay with either your partner's parents or your parents, and they give you head oil massages. They make sure that you're having like loads of nuts and oats, and they make you all these dishes that like supposedly increase your milk supply. And you're basically like treated like a queen because you just gave birth, which I think is the way things should be. But you know, it's living in like today's society as well. People got to go to work. It's just, maybe it's not the same. It's a faster pace of life. But,
and people say, how was your break when you come back from mat leave? I'm like, oh my gosh,
that one just it kills me.
How was your time break? Off? Yeah, exactly.
What have you been doing with your time off? Are you bored yet? And it's just like, oh my god. And it's just so frustrating, because I actually posted something on Instagram yesterday, like Romy was my other son was 100 days old, and I actually like in traditional, like Indian culture and Chinese culture, I know that's like a big thing, because they see it as like your baby's like hit a milestone, and also you, the mother, has, because she's come out of essentially what's called the fourth trimester, and hopefully her hormones like more settled and she feels like ready to kind of take on the world, like not alone, but like maybe doesn't need as much help. And I thought, gosh, this is not as big a thing as it should be. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it was just a weird one with the support, but we got over it, and you know, I continued to breastfeed him for a long time. So I guess it ended positively. It just maybe could have been addressed a little bit sooner. It just felt, I had a couple of doctors tell me, why don't I try formula? And I just felt like, well, there's nothing wrong with that, but if I'm coming with you to you saying I have milk and I want to give it to my baby, why are we not addressing that? And why are we looking at alternatives? And it just felt really, it just didn't feel like I was getting the answers that maybe I should have been getting. And yeah, it was just a weird mm-hmm. one.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that too, because I felt that a lot with Elle, my daughter, where I was like, it shouldn't be this hard, but I didn't know what questions to ask or who else to ask. And I was also met with those same responses, being like, well, it's just colic and maybe you should try formula. And it's like, It's just isn't a helpful, helpful cycle that we're in right now.
No, it isn't.
So anyways, with exclusively breastfeeding, did you know that you, when did you feel ready for Romy, and how did that journey go when you fell pregnant with him?
I was exclusively breastfeeding, hadn't had a period. I was on the mini pill, but I won't lie, I wasn't taking it at this specific, with the mini pill, you have to take it within a 2-hour window every day. And I won't lie, I wasn't doing that at the exact right time every day, but I still thought that was enough to like maybe not get me pregnant. And so Romy was a surprise. And it was like, at first I wasn't sure, and then figured it out, and the doctors told me I was, because it wasn't coming up on a pregnancy test. I think I was so far along that the HCG hormone had dropped, and apparently that means that it might not come up on a test, so something like that. And I was actually really nervous because I was returning to work. I was still trying to breastfeed Ace and try and express at work, and the expressing wasn't going well, because I think if you're not relaxed, you just don't express well. And I was trying to like express in like my, I think in like my car or something. So, and it just, I just don't, and it was, I was cold, and I think I just had all these hormones flying around because I was pregnant and I was dropping like Ace off at nursery and he'd never been. And it was quite a difficult time to navigate. And a couple of midwives did tell me that I should stop breastfeeding. And then when I did ask them why, I don't remember getting an answer, like a clear answer, but I never really understood actually why I should have, but then I did a bit of research, and there's another book, actually a really good book called The Adventures of Tandem Nursing or something like that. And it's basically the most like concise, like anthology written about breastfeeding, or like, well, at least like breastfeeding at the set while pregnant or why you've got two. And in there, it did say that if you're like healthy and you're risk-free, like low risk, sorry, there's no reason why you shouldn't if your body's still continuing to produce milk. And my body did. So I just carried on throughout my pregnancy. And I feel like it kind of gave me something else to focus on when I was feeling sick. So it did. It like kind of worked well, and I think Ace kind of self-weaned. I had actually intended on breastfeeding both of them, but he self-weaned just before Romy was due, when the milk starts turning into colostrum again, and he just didn't like the taste. So it's kind of like perfect timing, because Ace was a year old, and then Romy was on his way in a couple of months.
And did you have pregnancy sickness the same? Was it similar to your first pregnancy, or did it taper off?
I just don't know. You know, I think because Ace was such a bad sleeper, I just felt rough all the time. You know, like I'd spent the previous 6 months feeling terrible. So, you know, when you're just like, I didn't even have the luxury of having that isolated sickness, because I was feeling sick all the time from never sleeping. It was weird. I definitely knew there wasn't something. I was feeling more unwell than usual, which is why I went to the doctors. It was the first 3 months. I think it was just we were battling sleep with the other little one. So it was hard to tell. But then when like the weather started getting better and everything, I think it did taper off, and it was like a nice kind of golden COVID trimester. it was just weird in the sense that it was like having another baby and being pregnant. And I think because Ace was so young, there's only like barely 15 months between exactly for 15 months between them actually. So it's almost like I didn't have the luxury of even tuning into how I felt.
The lines blurred, I can imagine.
That's it.
Did you choose to go with the Serenity Birth Center again via the initials?
No, we didn't in the end. I was thinking about it, but actually, because we'd now been in the house for almost a year, it definitely felt more like home, and I always wanted a home birth. So this time around, I was like, we're definitely going to do a home birth, and it just felt like it made sense. I mean, they did tell us a few times it was touch and go with home births, like they weren't doing them, And it actually was a bit rubbish in the sense that we, when I'd asked to have a home birth, they said they'd call me and nobody did. And it took about, I think maybe like 8 weeks for me to keep calling somebody and ask, because when you have a home birth, somebody has to come out and check that your house is, you know, in, it's just, it's like, it's set up in a way that actually can accommodate to having a home birth and having midwives walking around. And if you needed to have, if you had a medical emergency, would you be able to get out easily and things like that? So like, you know, you weren't in a high rise flat or something like that. But, so that was all fine, but it took forever. And by the time they did come out, it was kind of like around the height of the pandemic, and well, maybe not at the height, but it was definitely when it was still quite scary. Not that it isn't now, but people weren't leaving their houses back then. And I remember the lady who came round, like, she was initially, what struck me was she wasn't wearing a mask, and then she came in, and I was thinking, well, like, I thought they're all supposed to wear masks in the house. And she actually really put me off doing it. It was just very like robotic, all the questions. And then I just didn't feel the confidence to go ahead with it. And then I actually ended up ringing another community midwife who was supposed to be dropping off like a home birth box, and just telling her, oh, there's no need to drop the box off because I'm not having the home birth now. I've decided after the visit, I just don't feel as comfortable going ahead with it. And her name was Angie Mack, and she was another standout angel midwife in my pregnancy journeys. And she literally just rang me up straight away, and I think she wasn't even working at the time, I think she was off duty, and she was just like, no, the reason, like, this is really important, so I'm not going to let you just text me this first and foremost. And it was just the first time it sounded like somebody wasn't treating me like I was just a number. And she said, the fact that you've asked to have a home birth and you've had a home birth, like, a visit, you must have really thought hard about that. So for you to text me, you don't want it now because you feel deflated or you don't feel the confidence. But we need to get to the bottom of this, because this is what you want and you should be in control of it. And I just loved it, the assertiveness.
Gosh, that's cool. It's nice, yeah, to be seen by healthcare providers.
That's exactly it, isn't it, Ashley? And I did feel like, wow, it takes one person to flip everything upside down, but it also takes one person to like flip it on its head again, and we'll flip so it back around again. And and she was so amazing, Angie, and she just told me everything I needed to hear. And so I was, home birth was back on, and so this was all by the NHS again. And then I couldn't like source a pool, because they dealt with it so late that whenever I like got in touch with any home birth pool supplies, like, you don't have to have one in a pool, but I wanted to, they were just like, are you having a laugh? Like, you're 37 weeks, like, you're supposed to have your pool. Like, we have waiting lists for pools like months and months before people turn 37 weeks. They were like, you could put you on a waiting list, but you probably won't get it till your baby's like 2 months old or something. And oh, I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, I couldn't believe, I was just thinking, you know, you still pay for these pools, by the way. Like, you pay like £200 deposit, £150 to hire the pool. And then I didn't know what to do. And I was just saying to my husband, I just feel like this home birth thing is just not meant to be. Like, I've been trying to sort, it shouldn't be this hard to ask to have something that statistically shows that it costs the NHS less to do, because you're less likely to have medical intervention when you have a home birth as well. And doctors and surgeons don't have to, you know, spare their time. And then my husband was just like, why don't you text Angie again if you've got her number? And I was like, I feel like I'm taking the piss a bit with her here. Like, you know, I messaged her before when she was off duty. And then, but I did. And I just said, I know this like sounds really annoying, and now you probably wish you never spoke to me, but I can't get a pool, and I don't know what to do, because I really feel like that I need one to have a home birth. And she like, I think she like went on a Facebook group, like a midwife group, and she sourced me a pool. And I just thought, oh my God, like, I didn't think she'd be able to do that.
And such an angel.
Honestly, such an angel. And so I got the pool. Gosh, I feel like I'm telling this big story about the pool, but it was all part of the feeling that I had around this birth. And then Yeah, so that was all good.
I also wanted to ask, because COVID was ramping up and changing week to week, as it still is, in terms of like the healthcare regulations. And I was just curious, because as it was ramping up, you were ramping up to give birth. So how are you feeling?
I think I was very fortunate in the sense that I had a positive first birth. And I think the fact that it was my second pregnancy makes a massive difference. Like I just didn't feel like I needed as much reassurance along the way. It was just more a logistical thing. So come on, I need to know I can have a home birth. I need to know that I can get a pool. Like, but so although we were in a pandemic, I kind of just went along with it. And I know a lot of the appointments were cancelled, but it was just, it was what it was. And I think the fact that I had a positive experience the first time, with some negative, like, you know, things along the way, but overriding it was positive, I think that made a big difference to me. And I think because Angie was my saviour, I wouldn't be saying this if I didn't have her come along, because she was the one who kind of like made sure I had the home birth again as well. Well, had the home birth, decided to continue with the home birth. It might have been a different story if I ended up on a labour ward. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Once the logistical things were starting to slowly be ticked off, how did the lead up to labour go? And how far along were you when you did start labour?
So I was exactly the same as I was with Ace, so 41 plus 3 days, so like kind of far along. I remember the night before I had like a bath, and we put Ace to sleep and I had a bath, and I just felt, I felt like I saw Romy like moving lower, but I don't know if I just made it up. And then I got into the bed and I said to Rick, baby's coming tomorrow. And we didn't know what we were having. We had a surprise with this one. So we were just like, I think we called him, we had like a nickname for him. We called him Genie, because he was like our good luck charm. Like, we had a few good things happen to us while I was pregnant with him. So we used to like have a joke that we used to rub the genie, and he used to make good things happen, but we didn't know if it was he or she. I was like, Genie's coming tomorrow. And then at 12 o'clock midnight, I started going into labor and had like strong surges, relatively strong, but they weren't frequent enough to be anything. And then we woke up the next morning and I was just like bouncing around on my ball, just like listening to music, walking around. And Rick was like, my husband was like, okay, so we're going to drop Ace off at your mum's then, because we're about to have a baby. And I just said to him, no, like, we've got loads of time yet. Like, Ace took 37 hours. We had an 18-hour active labour with Ace, so we can chill. And then I was like, let's go for a walk. So we went for like a 4-mile walk. I just wanted to enjoy like this last time as a trio. So, and I thought, I need to make this day really fun for Ace, even though, I mean, I guess that wasn't that fun, but it's the only matter of when you were having a knockdown, do you know what I mean? So we all went for a walk, and you know, the surges were nice, they were frequent. And I remember when we were on our way back a couple of times, the waves were a bit stronger, but still nothing that I thought meant that I'd have to like call anybody. And then we put Ace down for a nap, and I just remember like I said to my husband, like, oh, I want to use like a TENS machine. I've heard they're like really good. Can you like help me stick it on? And he was just like, it's not sticking. Have you got oil on your body? And I was like, yeah, I had like time to have a leisurely oil up in the morning. Like, of course I haven't, but I think it was like the second hottest day of the year. It was definitely 30 something. It's 30 something that day. So I was sweating loads, and that's kind of crazy in the UK. It was like the hottest summers for like 20 years or something like that. And I remember we were getting a bit like flustered, and then I was just like, leave the TENS machine. They're a bit stronger now anyway. I think you're supposed to use it at the early phase. And then he's like, I really think we need to drop Ace off. And I was like, no, it's fine. Like, we'll drop Ace off. Then I've got like an appointment later on. We'll go to that. Like it was an antenatal appointment. I don't know why. You just do crazy talk, don't you? Because looking back, I was like, why was I even going to go there? And then Ace came downstairs after his nap, and I remember putting my like satchel on, and I was having quite intense waves, but then in between I was trying to pack like his like pajamas or something in the suitcase for him. Like, I'd had everything ready, but I was just doing the final bits. And then Ace just looked at me like, Mom, like, and, you know, this is a kid that's 14 months old, but he's just like, Mom, you look like you're in pain. I could see it in his eyes. And then I remember just like having a bag on, and then we had a yoga mat on the floor, and then I was leaning on a ball, and I just said to him, I text my sister. I have a text message that was 9 minutes before Romy was born, texting my sister saying, what did I say? Oh, just in case I forget, Ace, I've packed some cranberries to pop into Ace's porridge in the morning. I just wanted to let you know. And I thought, why was I texting her that? Like, but for me, I felt so much anxiety around the idea of dropping Ace off somewhere, because he'd never stayed anywhere. He'd been in a pandemic most of his life where he was only around his mum and dad for the past few months. And I knew in my head that actually I'm going to not be in a good mind frame when I know that he's elsewhere. So I think that that's why I was in denial about how far along I was, because even Rick was looking at me saying, that's your transition phase. Like, I remember your face when you were in transition last time and you zoned out. And he said, you sure you don't want me to call the midwife? And I don't know why in all of this madness, I feel like we were trying to time the contractions, because I did it with the Ferreira app with Ace, the Siobhan Miller one. But this time around, I was like, oh, we'll just know. And then I remember just texting my sister, and then I just took my bag off and said, Rick, I think you need to call the midwife, because I'm just feeling the baby coming. And he's like, what? And he's like, you sure I don't need to call an ambulance? And then I was like, oh, I'm not sure. And then I was like, shut up. I'm not sure. And like, it's just crazy, isn't it? When you're giving birth. And then I remember I just like threw my bag on the floor and jumped on the yoga mat that was lying next to the birth pool. So obviously we hadn't filled the birth pool up. And then, so all this fuss with the birth pool, we didn't even fill it up. And then I remember just jumping on the yoga mat that I'd put like next to the L-shaped sofa, just in case I needed to lean over. And then I just felt my waters break. And then I was just felt like a real strong surge. And then just in between, like that, it was the moment before I knew the baby's going to be born. I was like, I think you need to call the ambulance. I know that the baby's about to be born. And it wasn't like, I don't remember feeling that scared. I remember just being quite calm. And Rick's going to laugh that I even used the word calm. I wasn't calm. But I just remember feeling in control and thinking, keep Ace, like, make sure Ace isn't like near me. Even though I remember Ace stroking my hair. And I just said, but I think the baby's about to come. And then out popped the baby. And
wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I didn't even look at, so I didn't know what we were having, and I didn't look at, I always knew that I wanted to focus on the health aspect of the baby, which is why we didn't find out again. And I remember just holding him and not knowing it was a him, and just seeing this like mustache, like we've got a lot of hair in our family. And I just remember thinking, that better be a dude, because that's one hell of a mustache. And then it was about a few minutes later where I just like kind of had a peek at his nether regions and was like, okay, yeah, it's a boy. But yeah, weirdly, time, even though it was, I'm sure my husband wouldn't explain it like this, but for me, everything kind of slowed down for a second. And I remember thinking, wow, I've had a 14-hour labor as opposed to 37. I've got my son here, so nobody has to have him, and my husband. This was kind of my dream, and I'm in my own home. So in a very ignorant way, because it was very risky, I remember thinking, wow, this is like amazing. But yeah.
So I'm assuming then you also had to deliver your placenta before.
Yeah.
Did the ambulance come first or the midwives come?
Ambulance came, but it was an hour, it was half an hour later the ambulance came. So you can imagine that was really, I remember Rick running upstairs and getting like the towels and stuff. But actually I just grabbed him and I ripped my dress off. I was just wearing like a spaghetti strap dress because it was a really hot day anyway. And then I knew that if I put him on my chest that it'll release the oxytocin. So I just kind of like sat up almost like put him on my chest, and then it came out within 5 minutes. yeah, the centre was there, just kind of kicked it to the side a little bit, and then I just sat down and waited. And then Ace, we chucked Ace in the birth pool because we needed him to be in a confined space. And he was just like looking at me. He's just going, he was trying to say baby, but I don't think he knew how to properly say it. And he kept going, but he knew throughout the pregnancy, we used to point at the bump and say baby, little baby. And yeah, it was crazy. They were half an hour later. And then the midwives came just under two hours later. So wow. Yeah, I don't think I ever would have. I think I always was destined to have it, a free birth, as they call it, or I know technical terms born before arrival of like midwife or arrival at hospital. But I was just obviously very lucky that he was okay. Like I remember just counting his fingers and toes seeing as he came out and just rubbing his feet to try and to get him to cry because he wasn't crying. And I don't actually know if they're supposed to cry or not, but or if that's old fashioned, but I just remember trying to get some sound out of him, but he just looked really calm.
Did you have to go to the hospital or all you needed was the midwives to come check on you?
No, yeah, just needed the midwife. So I do remember actually the paramedics coming in, four big strapping guys. So that was a little bit intimidating, I won't lie. And then I remember them saying, okay, we're going to get you to the hospital. So, and it was actually my husband who said, well, why? And he's like, to get the postnatal checks. And my husband was like, well, we wouldn't do that if you were having a home birth and everything was okay. And then we had to kind of push for the midwives to come. And then, so actually we were going to be sent to hospital, but I, in my head, I was like, no, the whole point is that I want to be at home for the whole experience. So please, if that's okay, can we do that? And then they called the midwives and they came. So maybe that's the reason why the midwives were there 2 hours later, where because they were maybe organising for me to go to hospital, but we knew that we were kind of within our rights to say we don't need to go. And because I looked around me and it wasn't very messy, and obviously I couldn't see down there or anything, but I could feel that I maybe didn't tear much or didn't tear at all. So I felt physically fine, and I could see that Romy was fine. Rick had cut the cord once the paramedics had came. So I just needed the midwives to come to just check on us and do their bit kind of thing. So luckily I didn't have to go. I had zero tears. Like she said, I didn't even have a scratch. So that was crazy. But again, I think it is from being calm, like being, I don't know why I keep using this word calm, because it's not calm, but it was being composed. Maybe that's the word. I don't know.
And then this is a selfish logistical question, because I'm also trying for a home birth for my second. And did you have to go into the hospital at all postpartum for like a hearing test or anything like that? Or were you able to do everything at home?
Annoyingly, I think I would have been doing a lot of it at home, but because it was COVID, they weren't coming home to do any of the checks. So that, we had a bit of a mare with all of that actually, because two occasions we got sent to the wrong location. So even with COVID, it wasn't that you'd go to your like normal doctor surgery or like normal like hospital ward. It was, okay, you're going to go to Aston Villa Football Club. And I was like, so I remember rocking up in the pouring rain. Weirdly, it was really hot, but after Romy was born, I just remember the weather being awful. And then I remember rocking up to this huge football stadium with Romy, and it was just like closed. And I called the like the midwife clerk office or something, and they were like, oh, we've given you the wrong address, sorry, you just need to go here. And I had like day five, so you can imagine, you've had a baby, right? So you know that you're in no position to have things go wrong like that, mentally, physically. And I just thought, oh my God. And then it happened on two occasions. So actually, logistically, what you asked, Ashley, hopefully for you, by the time you have your baby, they're coming back to the house, but I didn't really have that. And, but luckily when I went to the right venue, when they text me the right address, so I got a text message to go to the right place. I looked, and the lady behind the mask was my saviour, Angie Mack, again. And she was just amazing. And I remember saying to her, this was like a week later, I remember saying, I told her my story and she said, that's amazing. That's, I can't believe you did that. Well done. And I said to her, I'm so glad I saw you, because I know it's a lovely story, I've actually almost been having, like, I wouldn't say it's like PTSD, but I kept having like flashbacks and thinking, what if Romy wasn't okay? What if I wasn't okay? And I said to her, it's almost like starting to feel a bit traumatic, but even though it didn't in the moment. And she was definitely, I don't think I would have ever spoken to anybody and said that, but she was definitely, it must have been like I said, I believe in the law of attraction. I think obviously it must have been that I had to go to the wrong place and then had to be redirected and seen her. And I felt like she just really put me at ease. At the same time, she didn't diminish my feelings, but she didn't make me feel like I was going, like, you know, like she was going to turn around and call somebody and say, this woman's gone crazy and stuff. Like, you know, you start thinking that you might be seen in that way. You know what I mean, Ashley? So I just thought, actually, Angie just said all the right words. And she said, you're totally right to be thinking this. This is a very normal thing to be feeling when you have a BBA, a born before arrival. And I just remember walking out and feeling like, gosh, she's just amazing. I can't remember if I mentioned the Ferrero Rocher story with the chocolates and the midwives.
Yes, you did.
I did. Well, so it's come full circle, because I made really lovely big skincare hampers for the next lot of midwives. But obviously I gave birth on my own. Like, my midwife was my husband and my child. But I remember just thinking, oh, you know, they're going to want skincare, just things, because they're wearing masks all the time and blah, blah, blah. So they were really over the top. And I had a spare one sitting at home. And then I said to Angie, and I knew she lived near me, and I was like, she needed to collect the home birth box, like, from my house. And I said, okay, yeah, make sure that it's you, all right? Make sure it's you. Like, can you make sure, if you can't get it, just get it another day, because I want it to be you who comes and collects it. And then I gave her the little skincare hamper thing. So actually just felt really nice that I, like, got to see her again, because I don't think I'll be having a baby anytime soon again. So it was just, yeah, I felt like this is what I wanted somebody to have. And I wanted to kind of, like, bring myself back from the embarrassing chocolate situation.
It's such a lovely full circle. I hope, I wish all women could have Angie.
Yeah. Oh my God. She's out there. You're amazing.
I just wanted to ask one final thing about your feeding journey with Romy this time around as well. How did you find that?
So really, like, he took to it, like, brilliantly, because you can't practice these things. Like, you could know exactly how to breastfeed, but your child might not get it. So it's just, it takes two to tango, doesn't it? So he was like, just took to it really well. And obviously I had a year's experience, and you always have some soreness at the beginning, even if you're doing it perfectly. I've learned that now, but it was really great. But weirdly, so mine, it wasn't so much a physical thing with Romy, but it was more, I just felt so guilty because I had Ace around me, and not that he wanted to feed or anything. And he was having my expressed milk anyway, so it was fine. And he preferred to drink out of a cup, but it was more that he, it takes a very long time. I forgot that when they're that small, a feeding session can take like an hour. It was taking an hour and a half, like, once I was winding him, putting him back on, doing the other side. And I just had Ace wandering around like, what's this new thing that my mum's got? And, you know, I think it's just because they were so young, both of them were so young. And to me, Ace just still feels like a baby. Like, he's barely 18 months. I know he's a toddler, but, you know, and I just remember feeling a lot of guilt, and I think a lot of hormones are running wild. And I remember at one point saying to my husband, I don't know if I can keep doing this. Like, whereas if I gave him, I did remember discussing formula. I was like, if I gave him formula, like, a baby would drink a bottle much quicker, because it will come out faster flowing and blah, blah, blah. But then I don't know, I must have just had a talking to myself and realized that would make me unhappy as well. So I actually, carried on, and I think he's hit the 3 month mark like last week or something. So, and you just don't realize how clever they are. They just start feeding so much quicker, and obviously they're bigger bodies, bigger tummies. And now Ace is a little bit more used to having Romy. Like, he expects Romy to walk, come into the room in the morning when he wakes up. And it's just really, honestly, once you get over those 100 days, like, those 100 days need to be stressed more, like, people don't realise. And then you feel awful for not feeling like you can handle everything straight away. And, I feel like I'm coming out of it now, and it's everything's, like, just meshing together more seamlessly.
I could talk to you forever. I've been speaking with you so much, Emma. Well,
thank you.
I'm going to wrap it up now and say thank you so much for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to hear your journey. So thank you for sharing so candidly. It's really appreciated.
Thank you, Ashley. And best of luck with your second baby as well.
I hope that you enjoyed today's episode with Emma and hearing her amazing two birth stories. If you'd like to see more and read more from today's episode, go over to britishbirthstories.com and check out the blog for more info. See you next week.
Do you want to record?
And a nini.
Anything else?
Did all of those numbers go?
Look at all those numbers go, huh?
It's going too.
Uh-huh. It's recording. Do you want to listen?